talking industry, topical debate from the world of engineering, automation, and manufacturing. Brought to you by DFA Media Group. This episode is sponsored by Drives and Controls, the number one event for automation, power transmission, and motion control. Taking place the 5th and the 6th of June 2024 at the NEC Birmingham, in association with Smart Manufacturing and Engineering Week. Register now at www.drives-expo.com.
Potential customers are going to need confidence in the suppliers of the equipment that they're going to use in their network. So how do you provide them with that confidence? I mean, there's two types of installations, which we can talk about as well, whether it's a new installation or whether it's an upgrade, which it'd be interesting to hear your respective views on,
right,
which is the most common. But how do you gain the confidence of a prospective user?
Sure. Yeah. Well,
you do have this cybersecurity issue under control.
Yeah. Well, looking at it from a bigger picture point of view, Andy, at the CLPA, and I think in common with a lot of the open network associations, we have about 400 partner companies now that actually manufacture products using our technology. And so, you know, when you're building a machine or a line or whatever, there's a lot of choice for different devices you can use on that line. So, you know, there's IO, there's PLC, there's inverters and all the rest of it. And so obviously one of the key points for people who are building a system like that is to make sure if I'm getting a PLC from this guy and I'm getting an inverter from that guy and so on, that they better all talk to each other and work properly. And the way we guarantee that is by insisting that they all have to do a conformance test. So basically they develop the product, and obviously, you know, we work with them on that if they need support at that level. And then when the product's finished, it's submitted to one of our several testing labs that we have around the world. And it's put through its paces to make sure it complies with all our specifications and works in the correct way. And then at the end of it, the manufacturer gets a certificate that says, yeah, this complies with our technology. And then they know when they sell it to a customer, as if they're using products using our technology that have different functions from other vendors, as long as they've all been certified, then they know they should be able to put it together and there won't be any problems. That's kind of how we handle it from our point of view.
You'll be actually quite surprised how many companies don't go for the certification, because you can buy, you know, companies like us, we make CC-Link interfaces, which can go into a product like a Brinkman's inverter. And we always encourage companies to go for the certification. It doesn't matter which network. And the reason being is then you can guarantee that it will talk to third-party devices.
Yeah, absolutely.
But you'd be surprised how many manufacturers decide not to, and they just want to, you know, just fudge it. You know, even some very large companies, which has always been surprising to us, because it's not actually that much to get a certified product properly tested.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
Compared to how much you're going to be sending engineers to site to
work. Well, exactly. Yeah.
Network's not working. So.
Yeah, and we see that sometimes too. You know, you work with a company and they say, okay, well, the product's done now, so we're going to start selling it. And when we say to them, well, sorry, you know, that's not allowed. You, when you're a partner of ours, you have to get it conformance tested. And you would think that, yeah, if you spent the time and effort to actually develop the thing and get it ready for market, then, you know, the conformance testing is really just like the cherry on the cake at the end. It's, you know, it's kind of almost a formality if you've done it properly.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of the networks now are saying that certification is kind of mandatory. I can't remember if the CLP says, I know,
we
sort of Profinet is, I think, is it CC-Link? But anyway, but again, it's very hard to enforce it. So what we try and do, you know, because obviously we supply a lot of these, you know, network interfaces to lots of different manufacturers. So we also try and educate the end users. Well, I think that's something I know you've been working on, John, is to try and get end users to say, okay, we will only use certified products, because then you're guaranteed that they have this, you know, operability between devices, no matter which manufacturer makes them.
Yeah, absolutely. And we can, we encourage that too. I mean, you know, we've seen, like, for example, in the automotive industry, there's the large end users in the automotive industry that we're all familiar with. Their products are driving around our streets and neighborhoods all the time, and they often take that for that position too, that, you know, okay, well, I want to use these products, but if it's not tested and certified, I'm not using it, because you know, if you're building cars, downtime easily runs into the tens of thousands of euros, pounds, dollars, or whatever it is, you know, in a very short period of time. So, you know, they can't take that kind of risk. It has to be working first time.
It's an interesting
conformance process. Is that, how does that work? Is that subject to particular standards that you test to?
Yeah.
Are they changing rapidly over time? How do you keep up to date?
Yeah, well, in our case, at least, anyway, I mean, I can't talk to the other guys, of course, but in our case, we have published test specifications that are available to our partners, the companies that are actually making the products. And so they know exactly what's required and what they have to do. And typically what they will often do before they submit a product for testing is that they will do some kind of like initial testing where they test sort of like different parts of the product in different ways to make sure it's going in the right direction. And then when they finally finished all that part, then they have a final product that they submit for testing, and you know, they know what the test lab's going to do, they know what kind of parameters it needs to match, and then, you know, the test lab does all these tests that, because they're published, they're not a surprise to anybody, or they shouldn't be, and then hopefully at the end everything's fine and they get their certificate and everybody's happy. And certainly in our case, you know, the tests are quite rigorous. They're not, it's not just kind of like, you know, making sure it communicates in the right way or whatever. You know, we also have noise testing, for example, so that, you have to show that the product will run for a set period of time in an artificial noise tested environment where there's a noise generator that's putting out all kinds of rubbish into the frequency spectrum. Just make sure that the product can deal with that kind of thing too. So yeah, they're fairly rigorous, but again, you know, if you've been following the development process properly, it shouldn't be too big a deal, and you should be designing the product to deal with all that.
I think you've also got that other part as well now where, you know, it's certified training for installation.
Right.
I mean, in the old days, networks were fairly simple, but I know things like the Profibus Group, you know, they do certified training. I know HMS, we offer sort of certified training, but now we're moving into, as you said, more Ethernet-based networks. Actually, this is probably where you need to have even better installers, because you can keep plugging routers and switches and having them in all different combinations and adding wireless connections. And then you end up with bandwidth problems and data throughput and throttling errors. So this kind of need to have certified training of to install the networks correctly, I think it's becoming a really popular issue. I certainly know from HMS it's something we are very keen to help our customers and deliver those type of training courses, because the technology set is certainly in the UK, you know, we tend to be more electromechanical engineering doing automation rather than IT people. Mm-hmm. But as you said, Ethernet is becoming much more complicated, and the opportunities are great, but you do need to have more of an IT skill set, certainly to diagnose issues on Ethernet based networks.
Yeah, well, I guess, you know, this is coming back to the double-edged sword thing again. You know, it's offering you a lot more flexibility, but then to kind of take advantage of that, those benefits, yeah, maybe there's a bit of extra knowledge that you need to have to fully exploit it. So it's true, but you know, that's the way technology is. You know, technology is always moving forward and new features and benefits arrive, and you know, you need to know how to use them properly. Otherwise, we'd probably all still be sitting in caves cooking over log fires or something. So, you know, it's just part of the way things are, I guess.
And nothing in the fridge, yes. Right. So what do you see as the, I mean, just trying to formulate this, you're painting a picture where large companies are perhaps on top of this, but a lot of manufacturing companies of smaller size and SMEs, are they more susceptible to not having the in-house knowledge and perhaps getting involved with products that aren't properly conformance tested? Is that a risk area?
Well, yeah, you're right. Obviously, if you're a large company, you have more resources to throw at things and so on. I think, you know, one of the things that's happened is there's been a lot of talk over the past few years in the media about Industry 4.0 and the IoT and all this kind of stuff and Ethernet everywhere. And yeah, I think maybe some people have kind of gotten misled into the point of view that we kind of have to like rip everything out and put switches everywhere and there's cabling all over the place and Wi-Fi and, you know, it's going to be this massive, you know, undertaking. It doesn't have to be like that. You know, as we were saying earlier, in manufacturing, the actual pace of change in technology tends to be a lot slower than perhaps in some other industries. So what you typically see is that, you know, even for the larger companies, you know, they don't necessarily want to be spending money if they don't have to. So the idea is that, okay, we'll find some pain point right now where perhaps we can apply some of this technology to help improve it. So we'll kind of address that part of the factory or that machine or something first and see how we can improve things. And then, you know, we can kind of, if that works out well, then we can take that and we can take what we've learned and we can apply that to somewhere else in the factory maybe, and we can do it step by step. You know, it's a very sort of scalable approach, if you like. You don't have to go into the factory and throw everything out and spend hundreds of millions of pounds and start from scratch. You know, you can kind of do it step by step as your resources allow.
But you've also got this now where, you know, when you are using networks, you know, using the sort of technologies, where if you're a machine manufacturer, if an end user is having problems, doesn't matter whether it's a small company or a large company, they can now ask the machine manufacturer to dial into their device on a network and then get access and do the diagnostics and stuff like that. And I think this is something which kind of, as John said, you know, you've got different layers on things like Ethernet. So on these Ethernet networks, you can actually couple that type of remote accessing capability, which you can never really do on something like an RS-485 network. So, you know, as companies, how can I call it, don't have their own maintenance department anymore. Obviously, people are trying to shrink down their, you know, their overhead costs. So maintenance departments tend to be more fragmented. But then you can use the actual suppliers of the devices. Now, that, as I said, could be a machine. It could be even the device. You know, there's no reason why, a frequency inverter manufacturer can't dial up onto a network, get access to their inverter and help the local end user directly. I mean, whether they charge to pay or charge otherwise, another question. But then you've got the cybersecurity question. Is that something which the IT departments would allow? But the technology is definitely there, certainly with the, you know, the later Ethernet-based networks.
Yeah. But you also have the ability to upgrade the software and presumably do security upgrades remotely as well, don't you?
Yeah. You do. I mean, that's... Oh, sorry, John.
No, I was just going to say, I think the other key point here too is that, you know, all the different vendors in the industry are sympathetic to this as well, because, you know, I think they all realize that if they put this product out on the market, but it's like a nightmare to configure and set up and get running, then nobody's going to buy it. So you know, I think a lot of the device vendors themselves are realizing, you know, we have to make this as easy as possible for everybody if we're going to maximize our sales. So, you know, I think you very often see that, okay, so maybe there's some kind of complicated Ethernet or whatever going on under the hood, as it were, but then kind of on the surface from the user's point of view, they've kind of made it as straightforward as they can so that people can get it up and running quickly.
Yeah, I think also you've got, you know, you mentioned about firmware, Andy, that's quite important, because the more complicated products become, you know, they're using much more complicated processors. They've got a lot more going on inside. You know, even small I/O blocks have quite complex processors now. You know, to try and, as I said, update those things, you know, if it's sending an engineer to site, it's a very expensive hobby. And yeah, look how many times you have to update things on your mobile phone. Now, I know it's a little bit more complicated than a frequency inverter, but, you know, there is that issue. And also, don't forget, Ethernet networks, and in fact, actually networks per se, they're all actually improving their technologies. Look how many different releases they have, because they're adding new features or adding new things that people want to make their life easier. You know, they're adding new profiles. So how do you keep your devices on the network up to date? You know, you can either send an engineer and they plug into the device directly, or you do it through your network. But again, as you said, you've then got the cybersecurity issue. You know, how do you make connecting a device on a network secure? I mean, you know, two-way authentication, you know, birth certificates, all these things, they're there, but are people able to manage it? Because I think the biggest problem is you've got to have your own sort of in-house maintenance of your systems, you know, from a security thing. Passwords, you know, how many default passwords do you see on devices, John? It must be, you know, people just don't change their password. They can use the manufacturer's, yeah, was it 123 ABC?
Or even worse, there's a label stuck on it that says password is admin.
But unfortunately, that's the thing. I know industry's been forced to change. So nowadays, when you're talking of a, like an IoT product, you have to give it a one-time password. So, you know, like, you know, we make gateways, which are IoT gateways. So when we supply these things, you can only use the password once. You are physically forced to change the password before you can actually use the device. But that's because the industry isn't looking after the cybersecurity aspect of business themselves. IT departments, they're supposed to be really good at this, even though sometimes, you know, you see companies who've got email addresses of people who left years ago, you know, but that's their own housekeeping. But more and more, when we're looking at these more complicated networks, it comes down to the automation engineers to be the custodians and actually have this kind of discipline of removing passwords. So if anybody leaves the company, to remove their access. If you've got good housekeeping for cybersecurity, you know, that would solve a lot of the problems, because that's one of the biggest areas. You know, it's just people not changing their passwords properly. When someone leaves, removing that access from a network, you know, these are the things which, you know, can cause problems. Because let's be honest, most cybersecurity issues are created by, you know, disgruntled employees. You know, it's not some 13-year-old boy in his, you know, bedroom at midnight hacking into your PLC. It's usually somebody who's upset with a company and they just want to, you know, inflict a little bit of pain because they feel, you know, sort of a sour taste in their mouth. So
you made a point a little bit earlier, John, about, and you've just reinforced it actually, David, about the responsibility falling to automation engineers and people with electromechanical backgrounds. There doesn't seem to be a transfer of expertise from the, you know, the IT sector looking after perhaps the business requirements of an organization into the manufacturing sector. What's stopping that from happening?
Well, actually, I think, in probably the more enlightened companies, you might say, I think there is that starting to happen. I mean, I know I've talked to some end users where, they were big multinational corporations, but they have realized that, yeah, okay, so there's this blurring of the IT world and the OT world, as they call it, operational technology, the shop floor. And as a result, you're now starting to see in some companies that, yeah, the IT function, as it were, in the company isn't just for like the laptops on the desks in the office. You know, it's down on the shop floor as well, taking care of whatever it is that's down there that they need to look after. In fact, I remember a story from one of these companies where before this kind of thing happened, they actually didn't like having the IT guys come around and telling them what to do. And apparently the way they used to deal with that was when the IT guy asked where the PLC was on the shop floor, they'd just point to the big cabinet that said danger 600 volts on it. and then they'd leave them alone. But those days are past, you know, we're past that now, and everybody's working together to reap the benefits we've been talking about. And as a result, I think, you know, an IT guy isn't necessarily a guy sitting behind a desk in an office. He could be down on the shop floor with a boiler suit and a hard hat on and doing stuff down there too.
We're seeing a lot more people from what we call an IT background getting involved in decision-makings, yeah, about networks. As you said, there used to be this OT-IT, you know, gap, you know, which the edges, you know, they keep calling it nowadays. But I think there's this big merging, this overlapping of technologies. And maybe it's because people are more au fait with that type of IT technology because of the home computing. You know, they use BT Home Hubs. You know, you have to, you know, connect your smart TV. So maybe people are becoming more aware and, you know, and aware of the issues.
Yeah. And also, well, and as time goes on, of course, you've got a younger generation of people coming into the industry. And, you know, in the past, when you learned to program a PLC, it was all ladder logic. And, you know, back in the day, that was fine. And even today, you know, there's still a lot of ladder logic being written. But having said that, you know, you get guys coming out of university today or whatever, and they say, okay, well, can I program this thing in Python or whatever? And you know, the manufacturers are trying to embrace that. You see a lot of systems now that you can program it in C or whatever it is. And as a result, you know, that's moving things along into the future as well.
I think it's definitely changing. I know that I used to go to a security show at Excel periodically. And we were talking in the green room about my colleague John Newell, and when he couldn't get over from Kazakhstan, it fell upon me to go to the show and take a deep breath and try and convince myself that I knew enough about IT security to have sensible conversations. But what I tended to find was that a lot of little companies there with great specialisms in IT security, but were only interested in the business side of the activity, partly because, you know, banks are very lucrative markets and they didn't really understand, you know, it was, what is a shop floor, you know, and complete confusion about talking about the cybersecurity risks on the shop floor. But over the years, I saw that change. And these same companies were then forming partnerships with people who were supplying materials and components for manufacturing, and really understanding the importance of the shop floor as well. So I think that kind of bears out what you've said about a definite sea change in IT practices becoming more accepted and commonplace on the shop floor.
Right. You're seeing that big kind of change where in the old days in the office, you know, people would send a message on an office network. Nobody cared if it was sent two or three times. Whereas if you look at an industry, you know, we've always had these kind of deterministic networks, which always tend to be the top end stuff. But, you know, because we can't send the message two or three times, it has to be, you know, the first time, especially when we're looking at safety networks. And as I said, this, what John mentioned earlier about TSNs, you know, this is why we're moving over to TSNs, because we need to have that deterministic down into a more granular level. We don't need to have it just on the top end networks. We need it also on the lower end networks. Whereas the IT people who are doing an office network, you know, if they're sending that email two or three times and it's, you know, rejected, it doesn't matter. It will just happen on the fourth and they're okay with that. Unfortunately, we don't have that in industry. We're actually a little bit more, how can you call it, aware of those issues. And this is why TSN networks are becoming very important, because we can't send a message two or three times, certainly not on a safety network.
Yep.
Let's talk a little bit about TSNs, John, because that was one of the areas that we said we would cover. So talk a little bit about the evolution of TSN and what it has to offer going forward. And then after that, I want to talk about, 5G and sundowning. And I guess we could probably carry on talking for 5 days, but we've already spoken for 50 minutes. So let's focus on those two issues.
Well, I can give a very brief overview of TSN. I mean, like you say, I mean, I could probably talk all day about TSN, but I know nobody wants to hear that, so that's fine. But basically, TSN, as we said at the beginning, just to recap, it stands for time-sensitive networking. And originally, where it came from was nothing industrial at all. If you go back into the history of it, it came out of the professional broadcast and media industries. And it was originally developed for a more effective way for dealing with like broadcast signals in TV studios and all that kind of stuff. And it nothing to do with industry really at all. And so it was defined by a set of standards that were created by the IEEE. And that's under the generic name of 802.1, which is kind of like the group of standards that defines it and how it works. And if you ever really bored or need to get to sleep at night, you can go on Wikipedia and you can see there's an extensive coverage of all these different standards and what they do and what they mean and how they work and all that kind of stuff. But from the point of view of industrial automation at the moment, there's really only two of those that are really relevant to what we're doing in industrial Ethernet at the moment. I think there's maybe about 30 now altogether, but as I say, most of them aren't really relevant. So the two that we have implemented at the CLPA, there's something called 802.1AS and another one called 802.1QBV. And it turns out, as far as I know, those letters don't actually stand for anything. They're just kind of designation letters, I suppose. But those two taken together kind of provide the solution for time-sensitive networking for industrial automation. So basically, AS, what that is for is to provide like a common time base across the network. It provides a way of synchronizing all the devices on the network together, so they all know what time it is. And you may think, well, why is that important? Well, the reason why it's important is you can kind of use the analogy of running a railway network. You know, the trains all have to make sure they get from one place to another place at a given time. So, you know, you expect that the train's going to arrive at the next station at whatever time that's going to be. And as a result, you can run a network and everybody knows where the trains are and when they're going to get there and all that kind of stuff. But that's all possible because everybody who's driving the trains and at the stations and everything else all know what time it is, and they all know it's the same time everywhere, and as a result everything works properly. Well, TSN is exactly the same, really, except instead of it being trains that are going around between stations, it's packets of data which are moving from different nodes on the network, different devices. So that's why that one's important, because it provides a way to make sure that everything's going to get there when it's supposed to. So that's actually really the foundation for the deterministic performance that we've talked about already, that, you know, you know exactly when something's going to arrive somewhere, so therefore you know the performance of it is going to be predictable. And then the other standard, the QBV, what that does, that's kind of like the other missing piece of the puzzle. So I believe the official technical term for it is a time aware shaper, which what that means in layman's terms is that it provides the mechanism for queues of data, and some of them have more priority than others. So you can basically take all the different kinds of traffic that you want to have go across the network, and you can say, okay, well, this is more important than that, and so on. And, you know, as David was mentioning earlier, like, for example, safety communication. If you know, you've got a machine and something gets caught in it or whatever, and somebody hits the big E stop button, you want to make sure that that's going to stop or behave as you need it to immediately. And so, you know, safety would have a very high priority on the network traffic. But then maybe there's other things which perhaps you've got a camera in, looking at something on the machine, and it sends video frames across the network. And, you know, if it's providing you an update maybe once a second or something, then maybe that's fine. So as a result, that's a lower priority on the network. So basically, by using the QBV standard, it allows you to use the same network for many different functions. So the idea is, you know, in the past where maybe you had one network for safety, one network for motion control, another one maybe for your cameras and something else for your IO and so on, that was all, you know, fairly complicated and expensive to design and produce. But now with TSN, the possibility exists that you can now just put all this together on one network, even safety, and it all works together. And you know, your machines are simpler, they're less expensive, you can develop them faster, quicker time to market, and all these kind of things. So you know, it's offering a lot of positive benefits for as we move forwards.
That's a great explanation. So I guess your QBV would be like the equivalent of the railway signals, if you like. And
yeah, I guess, yeah, it's carrying the analogy on. Yeah, I suppose you're right. It probably would be. Yeah.
Okay. In terms of time, I mean, how accurate does the time need to be, and how much of a factor is that? I mean, are we talking cesium clock accuracy or something slightly less?
Well, yeah, if you dig even deeper into it, there's another standard called IEEE 1588, and that kind of defines all that kind of stuff. I mean, but basically the way it works, I mean, again, I don't think we get really deep into this here, but you have what are called grandmaster clocks, and they are basically the sort of time reference for the network, so that they say, okay, well, now it's 10:58 and 23 seconds or whatever, and everybody knows that. And really the way the determinism is guaranteed is that not only is it synchronized across the network, but you know, if I'm going from this point to that point, it's going to take this amount of time. So therefore, you know, to make sure that everything is moving around at the same rate, you have to plan for those delays to make sure that you're not expecting something to get there before it will do. I mean, you know, in the technical term for that is latency. So basically the delay that it takes for a packet of data to get from one place to another. And then actually, just to kind of finish that point, there's something else which goes along with latency called jitter. And jitter is basically the variability in the latency. So, you know, maybe sometimes it takes 11 milliseconds, sometimes it takes 9 milliseconds. And so, you know, by using TSN, you can keep all that under control as well.
Talking industry, topical debate from the world of engineering, automation, and manufacturing. Brought to you by DFA Media Group. This episode is sponsored by Drives and Controls, the number one event for automation, power transmission, and motion control. Taking place the 5th and the 6th of June 2024 at the NEC Birmingham, in association with Smart Manufacturing and Engineering Week. Register now at www.drives-expo.com.